All right, Alexander, we have to talk about oil. WTI crude is in negative territory. I believe trading at minus 37 for May futures. I believe June is expected to be a plus 18 from what I read. This is historic, a historic event. And we need you to explain it a little bit as to what's going on here. What is meant by the fact that oil is negative? What does it mean that it's WTI crude? How is this affecting the world economy? What does this mean for the United States, Trump, U.S. shale, Saudi Arabia, Russia, OPEC? We've covered these stories in great length. And it's all led to this historic day where we have oil in the negative.
Indeed, and a historic day, and if I may say, an absolutely extraordinary day. I think it's fair to say that nobody ever really expected that it would happen. There was some talk that an oil price might fall into negative territory a few weeks ago, but I don't think anybody really took that seriously. Now, what has happened is that the overriding story is that because of Corona, oil demand has crashed by 30 million barrels of oil a day. There's, you know, less oil now being used than, you know, at any time in the last few years. Despite the OPEC Plus agreement of a few weeks ago, there is a huge amount of overproduction. There is far more oil now that can possibly be absorbed. And in the United States, there is a shortage of space to store this oil. On top of everything else, you may remember that a couple of days ago, we were talking about MBS, the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia, and how he was sending seven supertankers with 14 million barrels of oil steaming towards the United States. Now, incredibly and extraordinarily and very worryingly, despite the OPEC Plus agreement, despite his promises to Donald Trump, those supertankers are apparently still heading towards the United States with all that oil. Now, in and of itself, those things, the massive overproduction, the huge capacity overhang caused by the collapse in demand, the running out of storage for oil, all of those things would have made the oil price crash. But what pushed it so dramatically into negative territory is that futures contracts on Monday interjected in an extreme way. On Monday, a whole lot of futures contracts matured for oil in April, which nobody wanted. So it was immediately dumped, and that pushed the oil price down. And of course, as you rightly say, there are more futures contracts for May, where again, nobody wants any oil because May has essentially been written off. And that acted as a drag for oil, the oil price even further. It is important to stress at the moment that this phenomenon of a negative price for oil is limited to the United States. We're talking about WTI crude, which is the US benchmark price. However, I expect the oil price in the United States to come back into positive territory very fast, though it will remain extremely low for some time. I think once these futures contracts are unwound, we will see it bounce back to perhaps $5 to $10 a barrel and stay there for a couple of weeks.
All right, Alexander, Trump is proposing an executive order to fund the oil and gas companies. This is a quote from the U.S. president. "We will never let the great U.S. oil and gas industry down. I have instructed the Secretary of Energy and Secretary of the Treasury to formulate a plan which will make funds available so that these very important companies and jobs will be secured long into the future." Another intervention.
Another gigantic bailout of another industry. And can I just say, I mean, I understand it in some respects because the United States has achieved in the last couple of years a measure of oil self-sufficiency, of energy self-sufficiency. They see that as a strategic a matter of strategic importance for the United States. They're clearly not prepared to give up on it. However, I have to say this, There are problems with this approach. Firstly, we now have yet another big bailout of another huge sector of the US economy. This can't go on indefinitely. There's going to have to come a point where time has to be called on this. We can't just go on, you know, the magic money machine, printing more and more money, or rather creating more and more money to support sectors of the economy, however critical they are. But putting all that to one side, I think people in the US oil industry, and perhaps generally in the United States, need to ask themselves some very hard questions. One of the features of the oil crisis, and one of the underlying reasons why the oil price has crashed in the United States to the extent that it has, is that even in conditions of collapsing demand, US oil producers are very unwilling to cut production. On the contrary, as I understand it, following the latest OPEC Plus agreement, which Donald Trump brokered with Vladimir Putin and MBS, some producers actually went back to their old practice of actually increasing production. Now, that, of course, has compounded massively this massive overproduction problem in the United States, overcapacity problem, and it has also meant that there is less storage of oil in the United States, less space to store oil in the United States. What US producers need to do, even if they don't like doing it, is accept what the market is telling them, which is that they have to cut production. They have to cut production irrespective of what the Saudis and the Russians do. And they can't go on expecting the Russians and the Saudis to go on giving them slack by cutting their own production so that they take up the space and increase their production in their place. That just isn't going to work in this market anymore. So on the one hand, I can understand why Donald Trump is doing what he's doing. On the other hand, it fills me with misgivings because, again, it's making the US once more bail out another huge sector of its economy, a huge, massively indebted sector of its economy, which can't be a good thing and isn't, if I may say so, the historic American way, which is, you know, that you let the market sort itself out. And thirdly, you know, it does seem to me that oil producers must now, in the United States, learn their lesson from this affair and start to act sensibly and responsibly, something which they have not been doing.
Well, why don't they just cut production? What's been stopping
them? Right. I'm going to make a couple of guesses. Firstly, as I said, they're massively over indebted. And when you're in very, very heavy debt, the temptation is to try to keep production going so as to maintain your cash flow so that you can go on servicing your debts and thereby appease your creditors and make it easier to cut deals with them. So there is that. I also understand that the nature of shale, of the shale oil industry, which is what we're talking about, is that simply stopping a well, simply interrupting a well, if you know drilling a shale oil well, isn't a particularly sensible thing to do. And that if you do that, it's actually very difficult. If it may not even be possible to restart production from that particular well. So given that you have investment, you know, sunk into particular wells, the temptation again is to keep production running. But I think beyond these very real factors, there is an ideological issue, which is that for many of these people, especially I suspect in the shale oil industry, the whole theme of that they've been following over the last 10 years is that they keep producing. This is what they're all about, that they go on producing and they find ways to keep producing, irrespective of what the Russians do, irrespective of what the Saudis do, and that it is psychologically very, very difficult for them to stop. Because if they stop, then that accepts that this perpetual oil production machine that they've put into place has ground to a stop, and that's not what they like to do.
Okay. The gambit here, Alexander, is that Trump's going to bail out the oil companies in the U.S.
Yeah.
Everything's hit a glut right now. Nothing's moving in the economy, but things are going to start to get moving again. That's the gambit, that they're going to start to open up the United States as well as numerous other countries.
Well,
all over Europe and all over the world. So the gambit is that this could be a short-term fix, and hopefully, I'm saying this is what's at play right now. Hopefully, come June, July, August, September, say July, August, September, things will start revving up and there will start to be some demand. I'm not saying full demand, demand.
Well, can I just say, I mean, you know, you can't push this can down the road indefinitely. At some point, if there isn't going to be a restart of the economy in some form, then I mean, we're going to be in a very difficult position economically, and that's putting it mildly. For the moment, there has to be an acknowledgement that there has to be in the United States a production stop of oil. I mean, I really do mean oil. I mean, you know, there's got to be the storage space has run out. MBS is sending all his fleets of super tankers. You've got to keep them offshore. You can't allow them into the United States. That's absolutely clear to me. But you've got to take action to clear this glut to the extent that you can. And that means no production. But in the not very long term, and I'm talking about weeks rather than months, I mean, weeks at the most, you've got to find some kind of way of restarting your economy. Otherwise, all of these problems are going to start to accelerate. What you can't do is go around bailing one sector of the economy after another by creating money. I mean, it just doesn't work like that. There will come a point where people start to give up, and you know, creditors of these companies start giving up hope that they will ever get their money back. Oil producers will start giving up hope that they will ever start producing again. There has to be eventually an exit strategy. I mean, I've been criticizing for taking a bleak view, but I've always understood that reality has to be done in a structured way, and it has to be thought through, but it does have to be done fast. And I think there are ways to do it. If you don't do those things, then you can only, it seems to me, keep this lockdown going by going over completely to a straightforward command economy. In other words, one where there is no private enterprise to speak of anymore. The state runs everything and it decides how much of anything is produced. I mean, it really would be. That's the only kind of economic system that can function in the kind of lockdown situation that we have, unless you're prepared to see the entire economy completely collapse.
No, but that's
not something I think most Americans want to see.
No, they're opening it up. That's my point. Yeah. I mean, no. Trump has given a plan to open things up.
Yeah, well, that's right. I mean,
he's outlined a plan.
Yes, he's outlined a plan. He's encountering enormous resistance to doing it.
Who cares? Who cares about the resistance? F the resistance.
The problem is, if he's encountering resistance, it's got to be implemented on the ground. And at the moment, the plan that he's outlined, I have to say this, is a very vague one. The details have to be filled out. And that's where I think the dysfunctional political system in the United States isn't helping things. If people get together, they can do this thing. They've got to do this fast. This crash with the oil price on Monday should have been a warning to them. At the moment, they don't really seem to be thinking this thing through.
No, they're not. This is my point. This is what I'm trying to say, is that he is going to get resistance no matter what he does.
Yeah.
Because they want him out of office. This is a political play at the moment. So Trump knows that the Democrats are going to do everything they can to make him look bad. And if it means destroying the U.S. economy, they will destroy the U.S. economy. If it means destroying the oil markets, they will destroy the oil markets. The Democrats have no problem with this whatsoever. They want this virus and this lockdown to get prolonged. They want Trump to make the wrong decisions when it comes to dealing mm-hmm. with the oil markets. My point is that this is a race against time. Trump has put the wheels in motion to get the economy open. A lot of it lies on the state level. So the governors have to implement their own plan tailor-made to their state. Mm. And Trump has been very specific that he's going to not try to get in the way of that. No. He's merely giving the guidelines, and the states will move forward with that. But my point in all of this is a race against time, because this is not, I don't want to say it's not an economic issue. Absolutely, it's an economic issue. It's a critical economic issue. But this has been hijacked by the political powers, i.e. the Democrats who want Trump out. Now, it's not only Trump's head that's at stake here, and it's not only the Democrats that are gunning to take off his head, and the Democrats are gunning to do it, and they will sink the United States if they have to. There's no doubt about it, they will sink the United States. But you're also looking at MBS's head, and you're looking at Russian President Vladimir Putin's head. My point is that I don't think U.S., Russia, or Saudi Arabia can take this much longer. And we've been complimentary of Russia, and we've said many times that Russia has game planned this whole thing out. But I think at this point in time, we also have to get realistic and say that even Russia cannot take this pain much longer.
I think Russia is in a different position, not because of the can ride out oil prices at this level indefinitely, but because I think in some ways they are moving more clearly and structurally towards an opening up of their economy. But that's a topic for another subject.
They're shut down. Their businesses are shut down.
We'll talk about that in another time. The problem with the United States is, if it's correct that people in the Democratic Party are so obsessed with Donald Trump that they're prepared to destroy the United States in order to bring him down, then all I can say about that is that, you know, what did the Greeks used to say? You know, whom the gods destroy, they first make man. I don't believe that is going to happen. I don't believe the governors up and down the United States are going to start, you know, go on obstructing this indefinitely.
I'm not saying at the governor level. I'm just saying these three countries, each leader is now in a race against time on a political level to get things moving, especially with relation to oil and what's happening there. I mean, each one of these countries is getting hit hard, by the virus, but even more so, you know, even doubly so, by this oil war, this oil crash. Yeah. And in Trump's case, I think it's a lot more clear in that Trump knows who his enemy is. He knows it's Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats. I think Saudi Arabia, maybe a different scenario. Maybe you want to elaborate on that. Yeah, and for Putin, it's a different scenario as well. He's definitely got enemies, and he's definitely got people who are also gunning to sink Russia. So that's my point. That's my question to you.
Of course he does. I mean, the point to understand is, again, I mean, it's difficult to see what each of these countries can do by themselves. The key point to understand is that we have an overproduction of oil, if you're talking about oil, of $30 million a barrel. Less than $10 million a barrel, which was taken out as a result of the OPEC Plus agreement. I said that was never going to work. The people who basically resisted production cuts at that time were the US oil producers. I mean, they cut production by 2.5 million barrels from their peak, but they were not apparently prepared to do any more. That has to change. I mean, it's inevitable it's going to have to change, because their industry is at stake. Now, moving forward, I'm going to say this simply, I don't think the real problem is the oil market anymore. It is the fact that we have lockdown economies everywhere. And ultimately, that's not a sustainable position with the kind of economic systems we have. We have to find ways out. Now, I don't know what kind of plan to get out of this MBS has in Saudi Arabia. I doubt he's got any, to be quite frankly. I don't think he's that kind of a person. I don't think he really understands what's going on. And I think if he had a plan, I doubt that Saudi Arabia is the place to carry out such a plan. I think the Russians do have a plan. And, you know, this is a big topic which we could talk about in another program. But, you know, I think they do have a plan. And I've been following the situation there fairly well. In the United States, there is a plan too coming from Donald Trump, but it's running into all kinds of opposition. And as I said, the political system there is completely dysfunctional. And, you know, one can't expect other countries in this situation, the Russians, the Saudis, Saudi Arabia is a hopeless case anyway, running to the US rescue. The United States has to sort out its own problems now. It can do it. It's got the resources to do it. But it's got to break through the logjam created by the political crisis there.
Well, I think it will. Yeah. I think it's going to have to.
Well, I think it will,
each
because
country's going to have to.
Ultimately, you know, I mean, I'm never a person who believes in the apocalypse. I won't believe it until it actually happens. I mean, I think there will be, you know, an unscrambling. And, you know, what did they, the British have this wonderful expression that, you know, nothing concentrates the mind so much as the prospect of being hanged. If we get into a situation where, you know, we're looking at the total collapse of the US economy or the conversion of the US economy into a command economy, I think people will pull together. And I think any holdouts in the political system who, you know, the Adam Schiffs and people like that, who want to use this to bring down Donald Trump, I think they're going to find themselves isolated at that point. But one point where I have to disagree with you, I mean, 6 months, if we're talking about, you know, autumn, that's, we don't have 6 months, we probably 6 weeks perhaps.
I didn't say 6 months, I said yeah, going no. into it June, yeah. July, August, they've got the plan in May set out.
I would say late June.
Yeah, I mean, they've got the plan for May.
No, I would say yes, I would say late June. I mean, yeah, I know, but you know, they've got the outline of a plan. They have to flesh it out. They have to find ways to actually implement it on the ground. We can't have a situation where some governors are opposing it and some governors are playing along with it. It's got to work out between now and June. That, in my opinion, is the time window.
No, they've got the plan. Trump has given the guidelines. The governors have to carry out their plan. May's already been factored in. I think most every country has already factored in some kinds of opening up in May.
Yeah,
just about every country in Europe has done that, in the United States and all over the world, that they're looking at May as a transition month. And I think Russia and Saudi Arabia will probably do the same, looking at the trends.
Russia does have a plan to open.
Right.
Can I just say something? Russia has actually restarted, it's not widely known, it's restarted quite a lot of its industries already. It's done it in a particular way, which is a, we could discuss in another program, but it does have a plan for May going forward. As to what the Saudis are doing, I have absolutely no idea.
Yeah, but in the US, the point is that in the US, my point is that the Democrats are going to want to drag this out as much as they can. And you're seeing that, case in point, and we'll wrap it up here. Case in point, look at Michigan, where you had the governor of Michigan, you know, coming up with all kinds of crazy restrictions, and you actually had the people getting onto the street opposing the governor of Michigan. So you can see that fight. But at the end of the day, any governor that goes against opening up their state in one form or another during the month of May, I believe, it's my opinion, will face opposition from the people. And eventually that governor, as partisan as that governor may be, because they're following orders from the DNC and the Democrats, who are saying, no, 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 keep everything in lockdown. We need to create as much trouble for Trump and the administration as we can. The people eventually will turn the tide, and they will get that governor to start implementing some type of opening up. And on the Russia front, not bringing in Saudi Arabia, my point on Russia is that they are getting hit hard, especially in Moscow. Businesses are closed. People are without jobs.
Oh, yeah.
This oil is like a double whammy, because while other countries, most countries may be facing just the CV crisis, US, Russia, Saudi Arabia, and the OPEC nations have this extra burden of dealing with the oil crash?
I think both the US and the Russians can cope with the oil crash for the moment, actually. But can I just say something about this? I mean, a governor in a place like Michigan can I think withstand protests. What they cannot withstand is if everybody, the entire business community in Michigan, all of civil, organized, economic and civilian society come along and say to them, you have got to start working towards reopening the economy, because if you don't, we are going to see a total breakdown here. That I think is the point where we're coming to very fast, and where you will see everybody starting to reopen. But you know, you've got to do it, and I said this before, in a structured way. You can't have Michigan doing one thing, California doing something else, New York doing something completely different, Illinois doing something different again. It doesn't work like that. All of these people need to start working together. You need to have what we call in Britain joined up government. And you will get it in the United States, because there is no option. There is no alternative. And as I said, if the Adam Schiffs try to hold out, I predict they'll be isolated.
Oh, then Nancy Pelosi's and her gourmet ice cream in her refrigerator. Yeah. All right. We'll leave it there, guys. Yeah. Alexander Rutger is editor-in-chief of the Deseret. Thank you very much, Alexander. The internet connection here is very, very bad. So a quick pitch,
Deseret Shop.
PayPal, Patreon, subscribe, star. You got a mug.
I've got a mug. Well, amazing magic mugs, the best mugs ever. I've said this many times. I'm going to quickly say it again. They are fantastic mugs. You won't get better ones. And you won't get better polo shirts than the one I'm wearing now. 100% cotton. Absolutely phenomenal. And we've also got great other shirts, T-shirts, long-sleeved, short-sleeved, V-neck shirts, all 100% cotton. And we've got hats, hoodies, and stickers, and ebooks galore. You can get all of these great things on our shop. Support us in the work we're doing. And Alex will tell you quickly how to do it.
DeseretShop.com. You'll find the link in the description box down below. Take care, everybody. Yeah.